The following is from page 208 of the printed edition. Belize Overview. Land. A low coastal plain rises to the Maya Mountains in the south. The forests are home to jaguars, pumas, black howler monkeys, peccaries, green iguanas, and crocodiles, as well as up to 60 species of snakes, such as the very poisonous Fertilance, locally known as the yellow jaw ptarmigan. There are almost 600 species of birds, including the endangered scarlet macaw and the gorgeous keel-billed toucan. The kaleidoscope of marine life ranges from corals, sponges, and parrotfish to manatees, barracuda, and whale sharks. People. Inhabitants include Maya, Quechi, Mopan, and Yucatec, Creoles, people of mixed African and European ancestry, Mestizos, mixed Spanish and Maya, Garinagu, mixed African and Carib, East Indians, Lebanese, Chinese, and Europeans, including German and Dutch Mennonites. Language. English is the official language, but Belize Creole, Spanish, Garifuna, Quechi, Maya, German, and Mandarin are also spoken. Livelihood. Much of the population is employed in growing and exporting cane sugar and tropical fruit. Fishing and tourism also provide income for many. Food. The country's varied cultures contribute to a deliciously diverse cuisine. Rice and beans cooked together in coconut milk is a traditional favorite. Often served with fried or stewed chicken, beef or fish, and fried ripe plantains. Delectable seafood is abundant and very popular. Climate. Located on the Caribbean coast of Central America, Belize has a hot, humid, subtropical climate and is vulnerable to hurricanes. Belize. Situated on the Yucatan Peninsula and bounded by Mexico, Guatemala, and the Caribbean Sea is the tropical gem known as Belize. This little country, formerly called British Honduras, is a melting pot of cultures, languages, customs, foods, and religions. With a population of about 300,000, Belize is uncrowded compared with the rest of Central America. Its lush, tropical jungles are home to gorgeous birds and fascinating animals, including the elusive jaguar. Here, too, you will find many ancient Maya ruins and majestic mountains adorned with towering palms and cascading waterfalls. A fascinating feature of the land is its huge network of caverns, some of which are connected by clear, winding rivers. The Belize Barrier Reef, which stretches the full length of the coastline, contains a spectacular array of corals and is dotted with keys, low islands covered with white sandy beaches and coconut palms. Early history. The Arawak and the Carib, who migrated from South America, were early settlers in Belize. Centuries before the Europeans came to what was called the New World, Belize is thought to have been the heart of the Maya civilization, with flourishing ceremonial centers and magnificent temples. Early efforts by Europeans to colonize Belize are not well documented. What is known is that Spain's attempts to subjugate the Maya failed. In 1638, British pirates settled on the coast of Belize. By the middle of the 17th century, settlements for exploiting logwood, from which a valuable dye was extracted, had been established. The British brought slaves to the country from markets in Jamaica and the United States, as well as directly from Africa, to harvest logwood and mahogany. Even though whip-wielding slave drivers were not as common in the timber industry as they were elsewhere in the Americas, living conditions were deplorable and ill-treatment was common. Many slaves revolted, committed suicide, or escaped and established independent communities within Belize. In 1862, Belize was proclaimed a British colony, and in 1981, it gained independence. The footnote reads, although Belize was called British Honduras until 1973, we will refer to the country as Belize unless the context demands otherwise. End of footnote. Seeds of truth take root. One of the first witnesses, then called international Bible students, to arrive in Belize was James Gordon, who was baptized in Jamaica in 1918. In 1923, this slightly built, soft-spoken young man left Jamaica to live in Belize. He settled in a remote Maya village called Bomba, where he married and began to raise a family. although far from his Christian brothers, he shared the good news with his friends and neighbors. How did the Kingdom good news reach the rest of this British colony? In 1931, Freda Johnson, a small woman in her late 50s from the United States, began preaching in parts of Central America. Traveling alone, sometimes on horseback, she preached in towns, villages, and scattered banana plantations on the Caribbean coast. Arriving in Belize City in 1933, Freda rented a small room from Mrs. Beeks. She heard Freda reading from the Bible and singing a hymn before going out each morning. Many could not help noticing Frida's unflagging zeal, such as when she did not stop for the usual afternoon rest as did most others in the tropics. During her six-month stay in the country, she stirred the interest of a Jamaican baker named Thaddeus Hodgson. Although concentrating her efforts in Belize City, Freda also visited some rural areas, where she made contact with James Gordon in Bomba. Frida's fine work enabled those who shared the same beliefs to become acquainted with one another and begin meeting together. More helped into the truth. Though communication was very difficult at the time, James and Thaddeus maintained contact as they carried on the preaching work in their respective regions. As early as 1934, Thaddeus wrote to the World Headquarters in Brooklyn requesting a transcription machine and recorded Bible talks. On Saturday nights, Thaddeus played recorded talks in front of the Supreme Court building, in a small park that had been used as an exercise ground for the Army garrison. Known as the battlefield, the park became just that. Thaddeus played recordings of Brother Rutherford's talks on one side, and the Salvation Army band played on the other side, accompanied by the booming of a large drum played by Beaumont Bowman. Soon, though, Beaumont responded to the Kingdom message and joined Thaddeus on his side of the battlefield. "I give thanks to my God Jehovah," said Beaumont, "for making me put down that drum." Another good place for public preaching was a small area in front of the open market known as Mule Park, where there was a hitching post for mule carts used to transport goods into and around town. Thaddeus, who was tall, brown-skinned, and good-looking and was known as a very dynamic speaker, could often be heard there. Despite the stronghold of Christendom's churches on the Bible-loving people of Belize, many honest-hearted ones, such as James Hyatt and Arthur Randall, both from Jamaica, responded to the good news. On the north side of Belize City, Thaddeus began conducting meetings in his bakery. To do so, he had to push aside the serving counter and place boards on chairs to create crude benches. On the south side of the city, meetings were held at the home of Cora Brown. In addition, Nora Fayad recalled that when she was a young girl, the few witnesses in her area used to meet in Arthur Randall's yard, next to her home. Vigorous preaching yields results. The hallmark of many of those early witnesses was their tireless preaching. For example, James or Jimsy Jenkins, though blind, walked all over Belize City, feeling his way with his stick. Molly Tillett says she could hear him preaching at the market, even when she was two blocks away. James was also remembered for paying rapt attention at the meetings, where he sat leaning slightly forward on his stick to catch every word. He memorized many Bible texts, which he used in the preaching work. Meanwhile, James Gordon was known in the villages around Bomba for preaching to everyone he met, carrying his literature in a portable mahogany case in one hand and a transcription machine in the other. Every Sunday, in the pre-dawn darkness, he paddled upriver in his hollowed-out log canoe and then walked for many miles in the territory throughout the day. At day's end, he could be seen trudging up the path from the river in the fading light. After supper, James conducted a Bible study with his six children until he was just too tired to hold up his book. At that time, Brother Gordon's wife was not yet a witness. In fact, one day when he was away, she burned much of his Bible literature. When James returned and saw what she had done, he stayed calm. With a firm voice, he simply said, "Don't ever try that again." His children were impressed by his self-restraint because they knew what a painful loss his wife had inflicted on him. Drawn by Jehovah's Spirit. One Sunday morning, James preached to Doreen Lightburn, a devout Anglican who accepted the book, The Harp of God. She could not hear everything the soft-spoken man said, but she wondered what he was talking about. Later, during a stay with her aunt Alfonsina Rabato in Belize City, a man stopped at the gate and asked permission to enter the yard. "He looks just like the man who brought me that nice book I told you about," Doreen told her aunt. It turned out to be not James Gordon, but James Hyatt. He played his transcription machine for the two women and placed the Harp of God with Alfonsina. Although very involved in politics, Alfonsina and her sister, Octabel Flowers, had been searching for the truth. What Alfonsina heard that day moved her to exclaim to Octabel, "You know, a man came here talking about the kingdom of God. I think this is what we're looking for." Octabel made a point of being there when the brother returned. All three women, Alfonsina, Octabel, and Doreen, embraced the truth and were baptized in 1941. The mother of Alfonsina and Octabel had recently passed away, and Amabel Allen, their younger sister, prayed to God that she too would die and go to heaven to be with her mother. Octabel invited Amabel to hear the talk, "Where Are the Dead?" Amabel accepted the invitation and never stopped attending meetings. Those people were drawn by Jehovah's Spirit just by reading the publications and going to the meetings, says Olga Knight, Doreen's daughter. They were so excited about the truth that they soon started telling others what they had learned. For example, Olga's father, Herman Lightburn, accepted the truth after reading the book Children during a stay in the hospital. He was so enthusiastic about what he was learning that he rented a truck every Friday to take the small band of publishers to witness in the surrounding villages. He also did extensive preaching in the rural area of Black Creek, where he had a farm. "My parents preached along the Belize River," recalls Olga, "and the people would come with lanterns in the evening to listen. Every morning when we were on vacation at the farm, my parents, my Aunt Amabel, her daughter Molly Tillett, and I, all mounted on my father's horses, one behind the other, would ride along the trail until we got to Crooked Tree. There, while the horses were led out to graze, we studied the Bible with interested ones. As a result, some of those families came into the truth." In 1941, the first group of new publishers was baptized in the waters of the Caribbean in Belize City. Included in this group was George Longsworth, who pioneered from that year until he died at the age of 87 in 1967. He did much of his preaching in the interior, where he opened up new territories, riding on horseback for miles between towns and villages. George's consistent zeal for the ministry and his regular meeting attendance were especially encouraging to newer ones. Jehovah was using these zealous and faithful servants in a powerful way to draw honest-hearted ones into his organization. The first missionaries arrive. October 5th, 1945, saw the arrival of Elmer Eyrig and Charles Hayen, graduates of the first class of Gilead. Just the day before, however, a hurricane had struck about 100 miles south of Belize City. The 10-mile stretch of road from the airport to the city was underwater, so the two missionaries were transported in large army trucks. Thaddeus Hodgson placed cement blocks and wooden boxes in the water in front of his home so that when the two arrived, they could enter without getting their feet wet. The brothers in Belize eagerly anticipated the arrival of the first missionaries. James Gordon, Leon Requena, and Rafael Medina were willing to travel from the north of the country to Belize City to meet the new missionaries, quite a challenge at that time. There was no highway connecting the north of the country and Belize City, explains Ismael Medina, Rafael's grandson. There were only picados, rutted trails used for mule carts. There were no houses along the way, so they slept wherever night found them, despite the snakes. When they had met the missionaries and received instructions and literature, the three brothers walked all the way back again. It took days. The missionaries were introduced to the public in Mule Park in a most unusual way. James Hyatt began the program with a scathing attack on the clergy for their false teachings, which provoked an outburst of profanity from some of the onlookers. At the end of his talk, he abruptly pointed to the two new missionaries and said, "I hand these two over to you." That was about as much as the public was going to find out about the two new brothers on that occasion. There was no doubt that those early brothers had an outstanding love for Jehovah and Bible truth, as well as an abiding hatred for false religious teachings. It was clear, too, that the missionaries had valuable experience to share with the eager publishers that would help them become more effective preachers. The two missionaries started their work in Belize City, which had a population of about 26,700 at the time. It was built on fill, which brought it to the height of just 1 foot above sea level, and it had poor drainage. Added to that, the climate was hot and humid. The homes had no city water supply, but in almost every yard, there was a large wooden vat to collect rainwater during the rainy season. Sometimes, though, the rain came with a vengeance, such as in 1931, when a hurricane demolished the city and killed more than 2,000 people. Progress despite restrictions. Although there was never a ban against the activity of Jehovah's Witnesses in Belize, the government imposed a ban on our publications for some time during World War II. Shortly before the arrival of the missionaries, though, these restrictions had been lifted. Nevertheless, the Watchtower of July 15, 1946, reporting on the activity of the two missionaries in Belize, stated, "In the interior, a Roman Catholic priest still tries to have the ban enforced against the literature received by mail. The Roman Catholic clergy resent the presence of these two missionaries of Jehovah's Witnesses, and one Irish-American priest grew indignant that the British colonial government should let them into the country. The two missionaries reminded the priest that he claimed to be an American himself, and they sent him scurrying away by showing him from American prison statistics that the Roman Catholic system was no real guardian of the morals of the people of the United States." The first accurate record of publishers in Belize was in 1944, when 7 publishers reported. To give a more effective witness, the publishers began using testimony cards in the door-to-door work. Within a year of the arrival of the missionaries, the number of publishers rose to 16. In 1946, Nathan H. Knorr and Frederick W. France, from the world headquarters, visited the country and established a branch office here. Brother Knorr gave a talk on organization, explaining the need to report field service on the printed forms provided. Brother France urged the congregation to show mercy to others by continuing to preach the kingdom message. Later in the week, Brother Knorr explained to an audience of 102, which included many interested persons, why the interested ones should be glad to be with Jehovah's people. He invited them to study the Bible regularly with the witnesses. That same year, Charles and Annie Ruth Parrish and Cordis and Mildred Sorrell arrived. Truman Brubaker and Charles and Florence Homolka followed them in 1948. They were most welcome, for much work lay ahead. Much work to do. "There was only one small congregation then," wrote Elmer Eyrig, "there being no congregations in the outer districts. I used to go to these places and spend a couple of weeks at a time, sowing seed by placing books, taking subscriptions, and giving talks." During that first year, Charles Hayen traveled by truck to Orange Walk, where he worked the territory and encouraged the brothers to hold regular meetings. The only link with the southern towns was by boat, so Elmer and Charles traveled on the Heron H to reach the coastal towns of Stan Creek, now Dangriga, and Punta Gorda, 2 Garifuna settlements, with the goal of opening up the preaching work there. Back then, Punta Gorda could only be reached by a 30-hour boat trip from Belize City. Elmer made the trip and then gave a public talk to about 20 people in the lobby of the hotel where he was staying. Olga Knight remembers Elmer accompanying her family to the remote village of Crooked Tree, where her father conducted meetings along the tree-lined river. The local brothers appreciated the hard work and humble attitude of the missionaries. By 1948, there was an average of 38 publishers, and 4 new congregations were formed outside of Belize City. These small congregations were made up of a handful of publishers in rural communities, such as the Lightburn family in Black Creek, the Gordon family in Bomba, the Humes and Aldana families in Santana, and Brothers Requena and Medina in Orange Walk. The missionaries and special pioneers were concentrating their efforts on Belize City, as they had been encouraged to do. Jehovah blessed their diligent efforts, and an ever-increasing number of sincere people were becoming Jehovah's servants. Brother Knorr's next visit, in December 1949, was timely and encouraging. He spent one evening in the missionary home talking about the challenges of missionary work. Many new publishers wanted to serve Jehovah but did not appreciate the need to dedicate their lives to Him and symbolize it by baptism. Brother Knorr reminded the missionaries that patience, endurance, and love for people were needed. He also reminded them that they had enjoyed good results.